As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Yesterday, The Athletic revealed that West Ham have held talks with Sporting Lisbon boss Ruben Amorim to be their next manager. He's also been looked at to replace Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool. So who is Ruben Amorim? And why is he in such high demand? I'm Ayoa Kimwalere. Welcome to the Athletic FC podcast. Okay, with us today, we have the Athletic's senior football correspondent, David Ornstein, and data writer, Mark Carey, as well. Right, on Monday, David, you broke the story of West Ham, who are in talks with Ruben Amorim, the Sporting Lisbon manager, who is also a candidate for the Liverpool job as well. Right, before we go into the Liverpool angle, first of all, talk to us about how on earth West Ham got involved in all of this.
Yeah, well, Liverpool had been billed as the favourites to appoint Ruben Amorim, but the reality was rather different to that. We'll come on to speak about it shortly. In the meantime, West Ham have attempted to steal a march on the likes of Liverpool and anybody else who are interested in Ruben Amorim. And they held conversations. They conducted talks with his camp, and it seemed that very quickly they made him their top target if they are to part with David Moyes this summer. Now, naturally, it could happen because he's out of contract in June. But no decision will be made by West Ham or by David Moyes until the end of the campaign, which has been their line throughout. And just before recording this podcast, that was reiterated to me. They are duty-bound, therefore, to go about contingency planning for the event of David Moyes leaving. And that's where Amorim has come into play. It's bold, it's ambitious, and if the images of him flying over from Portugal to London yesterday are anything to go by, we got the sense that maybe it will happen. Well, I think we need to put the brakes on that a little bit and urge some caution, because talks and conversations, even negotiations, are normal. You talk about whether he would be interested, whether he would come, how interested you are, the finances involved, all these various factors. The messages I was getting, and we revealed on The Athletic, were that this sort of opportunity, the potential at West Ham, the path they're on, the platform, this stage of his career, it would be something that carries some appeal to him. However, we don't and didn't know where West Ham stack among his presumably multiple options, which may include staying at Sporting Lisbon, of course. And he returned from this London trip to Lisbon, and today, on the day of this recording, reports have been emerging that he's unlikely to join West Ham. We don't know if that's down to the finances involved. He earns a really healthy salary at Sporting Lisbon. There is a buyout clause as well in his contract, which I've been led to believe is around 10 million euros this summer. That is lower than some people have been reporting. I respect everybody else's work. Let's see exactly what it is. It's come down, that's for certain, from what it was, say, a year ago when Chelsea had spoken to him on a couple of occasions about their managerial position. And all clubs will have to factor that into their thinking. And so we're just going to have to wait and see how it develops. In the meantime, West Ham will be looking at others too. So Julen Lopetegui is one they've assessed and done some work on. Even if Amorim had jumped to the top of their list, we shouldn't disregard somebody like Lopetegui. I think Paulo Fonseca, who's done a really good job at Lille, is also in the thoughts of West Ham. And there will be others too. But yeah, this Amorim news really took a lot of people by surprise, myself included, when the information came my way. And you're sort of making your checks and thinking to yourself, did I hear that right? Is it for certain? And it was, and fair play to West Ham. But interest doesn't correlate necessarily to appointment. So we're going to have to show some patience and see how this pans out.
West Ham haven't had a good run of late. You know, they've lost three of their last four matches across all competitions, including that one against Bayer Leverkusen, that game against Palace. You know, that's the fourth time that West Ham have been beaten by five goals or more this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that probably compounds it is that they are playing quite underdog football, shall we say. You think, you know, if you're maybe going for it, trying to play quite expansively like a Brighton, shall we say, and maybe getting beaten by quite a big margin, you think, okay, well, we tried to go for the game and we got undone and maybe there's slight weaknesses in our team. But the fact that West Ham are playing that kind of back foot underdog football and still getting beat, you think, okay, well, where's the positivity? And I think that, you know, for long periods, David Moyes has justifiably been able to say, well, we've been able to win, get higher up in the table, win a cup in European football. There's evidence to show that we can play this type of football and be successful. But if you're not being successful and you're playing that sort of football, getting beat by those sorts of scorelines that you mentioned, it is sometimes quite hard to justify that for the fans. So you can see why they maybe want to have more exciting football. And with a manager potentially like Ruben Amorim, you can understand why.
David, you can understand with David Moyes, I mean, like any club, right? You might have to look at different options. He has sort of been at the helm of one of the most successful periods in the club's history, but I mean, this is also business to a certain degree, right?
Yeah, I think looking at candidates is just nature of the beast. They have a responsibility because David Moyes could choose to leave. They could choose to part company with him. It can be a mutual agreement. So this is just business as usual and they're dealing with the situation in front of them. I do just want to say that David Moyes has done an incredible job at West Ham. All three of us can remember some of the days that they've been through. Some relatively recently, the fan on the pitch when Burnley came to the London Stadium holding the corner flag in, sadly, one of the most iconic images in modern Premier League history. And even dating further back to relegations and some really dark days at both Upton Park and the London Stadium. And so what he's done is he's stabilised and he's taken them to heights that at this point in time, they probably never imagined scaling. Multiple European qualifications, a European trophy, very respectable Premier League finishes. At times, some fantastic football. Now, there have been some frustrations too, because it's all relative. And when you get to that point, you want to kick on. You want to sign better players. You want to play a nicer style of football. And David Moyes has shown a lot of resilience during this second stint at the club. And let's not forget, he was here once before and many would have had him marked down for failure second time round. It's been nothing of the sort. But the resilience I touch upon is somebody that was written off many times and he would pull a result out each time. There are months and months that have gone by where I've seen that happen and think, wow, he's turned into the great survivor. And so he is a really good top, you could say, Premier League manager, if you consider the work he did at Everton and has done with the resources at West Ham. But there may be a point at which he says, I don't feel I can take this club any further. And they feel that they want to take things in a slightly different way in terms of their style, in terms of their ambition and the sort of profile of a coach that they would be looking for. It's possible that that is not a controversial thing, that all parties can see that. And they've got a new sporting director in Tim Stuyten, who will have his own ideas. And that appointment in itself maybe was a sign that West Ham's ownership are looking to kind of modernize, evolve this club in a certain way. And there have been suggestions that not all has been completely well between the sporting director and the manager. And so perhaps this is a natural repercussion of that. But as Roshane points out, and you alluded to it there, with West Ham, you just never know. So let's not treated as a fait accompli that Moyes is toast.
As we are talking about Amorim, let's delve in a little bit, Mark. I mean, Sporting Lisbon, they're clear at the top of, you know, the league in Portugal. And he's brought a lot to that club since being there. Can you just give us a brief sort of round off as to why he's been so good for Sporting Lisbon and why he's on the lips of quite a few clubs at the moment?
Yeah, well, I think taking the second question sort of first, I'm writing a piece on him at the moment, and I sort of felt compelled to say that his ascent has been both rapid and eventful, because he only started as a full-time manager in 2018. He was in the third division of Portuguese football at a team called Casapia. And then he moved to Braga Reserves for a short amount of time. He was only in that role for 3 months before he was then thrust into the first team setup because the manager got fired. Did incredibly well. I think he won 10 of his 13 games in that time. And you could see that this was a manager on the rise. So Sporting, because they weren't doing so well at the time themselves, were on high alert for this and then brought him in March 2020. Now, in his first full season, he guided Sporting to the Portuguese title at the age of just 36. So a bit in the same way that we've spoken before about Xabi Alonso, in giving him the opportunity to bring a club, his own ideas into a successful club, and you can see the sort of the fruits of his labour. So the first full season, age of just 36, wins the title. And as you mentioned, this is of the four full seasons that he's been here. We're not really counting our chickens by saying this will be the second title that he'll bring to Sporting. And you mentioned it as well, that the stranglehold that both Porto and Benfica had on Portuguese football since the turn of the century really was really strong. So it was the first, to contextualize it, the first title when he won the first one was the first in 19 years. So it shows that they're not necessarily already dominating Portuguese football. Yes, there's the big three within Portugal, but his style overall is a very fluid, high possession style, typically a 3-4-3. I won't go too much into the nuances of that, with a 3-4-2 on a bit of a 5-2-3 out of possession, but it is very, very fluid, very, very progressive. I think contextualizing the fact that they are still going to be dominant compared with a lot of the teams in the Portuguese league means that he can really get those ideals across. I think it would be really interesting to discuss how that might differ for the West Ham side, who aren't going to necessarily be in the top three themselves, and how we can maybe relay those messages to play more dominant, at West Ham with the players that they maybe have. But yeah, I think overall, in such a short space of time, he's proved himself to be a really good coach, a really good man manager, very good at bringing young players through, really good at improving the quality of the players that he has at his disposal, regenerating the squad as well, I think, which is crucial, because he's lost a lot of really good players to elite clubs, managed to regenerate, because Sporting, for all their sort of quality within the Portuguese football food chain, in wider European football, there are clubs, João Palhinha being a really good example of a really fantastic destructive midfielder, one of the best in the Sporting squad, goes and gets picked up by Fulham, who, again, within the wider context of Europe, you'd say maybe Fulham aren't as big as Sporting, but you think about the pull of the Premier League. So he's used to losing a lot of players, regenerating, and now we've seen this season, title winners again.
Let's say he did go to West Ham, right? Would he have a lot to do with this current squad? Because you think about players like Kudus, you think about Paqueta there, you know, you've got some really dynamic players. They're Bowen out there, out wide, super attacking, you know, on the front foot. Sounds like the kind of players that he'd really like to take hold of. Do you think that squad needs much more changing for someone like a manager like that?
It's a good question. Those three in particular, the ones that I had in mind here, would suit the most. I'd probably say Edson Álvarez, you could probably include in that, because he's a good destructive midfielder and able to sort of, you know, just play it quite simply as well. I think, yes, I think they'd have to change quite a lot in terms of their style. We know about West Ham's Route 1 football, direct football at times, you know, they'll often sit in a deep block and counter-attack. And I think that there would have to be quite a lot of sort of change, maybe more so in the defensive areas. I think that Ruben Amorim likes to build up really neatly, sometimes push a centre back into the midfield areas, have his wing backs stay really nice and wide in attacking areas. And I wouldn't say West Ham currently, but they could obviously sign new players, currently have that sort of quality to not get caught out when we're talking at the elite level of Premier League football. So, you know, they have sort of a wide right-sided wing back, and I can't imagine Vladimir Soufal being that same player to kind of have a bit of that trickery and get to the byline quite in the same way, as I say. But for the core of the team, as you alluded to, they do have a really high technical quality. The thing I would say as well is that West Ham tried this a few years ago in moving away into a more of a forward-thinking, progressive style under Manuel Pellegrini and didn't work out all that well. Obviously, then came back to David Moyes, as we've spoken about in his second stint. Even with David Moyes, they obviously brought in the likes of Gianluca Scamacca and tried to be a little bit more technical. Didn't quite work out, and they've kind of found more success in this style as well, as a bit more, as I mentioned, underdog football. So if they did try and change, it would need to come with potential teething problems and quite a bit of patience. But like any team, there's no reason why it can't change. We've seen, again, I mentioned it before with Brighton, how they were fighting relegation only a few seasons ago, and look at them now. So it can be done, but I think right now there's a core of players, but I don't think it's a ready-made fit for Amorim to really implement his style with what they have.
David, just before we move on from West Ham, I was just thinking about all these rumours about new managers potentially coming to the club. And also, I guess to a certain degree, that probably signals the ambition of West Ham, where they want to kick on and move on to. But, you know, you think about players like Lucas Paqueta, who's been notoriously linked with Manchester City, even Kudus to a certain degree, wanting to a player of that stature probably deserves Champions League football. A top manager coming into West Ham, could that persuade the likes of top players like that, for instance, to maybe consider another year at West Ham?
Well, it could, of course. But if those guys have their heart set on a move away and the suitable offers arrive, then you suspect some movement could take place. I'm not saying it will, but we know that Lucas Paqueta, and we've reported this recently on The Athletic, is still wanted by Manchester City. Now, there is a betting case that is unresolved at this point in time, so it's not clear how that affects matters. If it hadn't arisen last summer, then Manchester City were preparing a move for him and might well have completed that had the numbers been right. There's a release clause in his contract. If they hit that, or if West Ham are willing to negotiate below it, then of course some movement could happen. Naturally, the identity of any new manager may impact the thinking. But at this point in time, if somebody like that is dead set on stepping up to Champions League football and contending for the biggest trophies with a Manchester City, and West Ham are happy with the proposed numbers, then it will still happen.
You're listening to the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Let's move on to Liverpool. And Mark, I'll come to you after I've just touched on it quickly with David. In terms of, you know, the managerial search, where are we with things right now, David?
Ruben Amorim has always been in the conversation for Liverpool. He's somebody that they've done a lot of work on, as they have other candidates, by the way. And he's impressive. The numbers tell their own story. Mark's gone through a lot of what may appeal to a club like Liverpool. The one caveat is, and you can only speak with the information and understanding that you have, is he was never said to me to be the leading candidate or nailed on for this job. That came via reports, I think mainly in Portugal, and I've got total respect for other journalists and their reporting, but it didn't correlate to the reality that I was hearing and being told. And so when we suddenly all say it felt it was going to be him, it's because of reports that had conditioned us to think that way. But I think the reality inside Liverpool was definitely different to the external conversation. And that means Liverpool's process continues. Maybe he is still in the conversation in some way, shape, or form. I've just reported that it's unlikely that he will be going to Anfield. Let's just see how it develops. They will be conducting a thorough and methodical process led by Richard Hughes, the incoming sporting director, overseen by Michael Edwards, the new CEO of football for Fenway Sports Group. And it will take some time. They no doubt will hone in on their target pretty soon if they haven't already, or at least maybe a top three. And they will conduct their interviews and their due diligence with the help of Will Spearman, the director of research at Liverpool, of their recruitment experts such as Barry Hunter and David Fallows. And I've got no doubt that they will come out with a really good appointment. There is pressure on them, of course, especially on Hughes and Edwards in their new positions. But all the messages I've received are that they're not afraid to be brave and bold in this and think maybe a bit outside the box. It might not be the populist choice. They're not looking for applause from the public with this decision. They're looking for the right appointment for Liverpool, for the future of this club, to replace Jurgen Klopp and to continue to keep Liverpool competitive, to fit within this new setup and work collaboratively with them. And there will be major criteria around the style of play. They'll want a high tempo, possession-based, exciting brand of football. They'll want somebody who can connect with the Liverpool fan base through their style of football and through their personality. They'll want some track record, I'm sure, whether it be Premier League experience or not, I don't know for certain. All of these factors, and there will be many more, will combine. It doesn't necessarily have to be some big name. And I think Liverpool want to get away from this cult of the individual and actually pick somebody that is going to be fantastic on the training ground, that is going to be able to carry the weight of Liverpool on their shoulders and deliver on match days and take Liverpool into this new era. And we've seen multiple names linked with it. Every day there seem to be more. You know, Unai Emery, and is someone we'll come on to talk about. He's going to be staying at Aston Villa. I'm going in no particular order here. Roberto De Zerbi, it's always been my understanding that they will not be going for him. Gary O'Neill has come up in certain dispatches. I'm told it will not be him. Andoni Iraola of Bournemouth, of course, the incoming sporting director, Richard Hughes, appointed him when he was there. So let's see if somebody like that develops. Again, I've got nothing to suggest he will. A name like Arne Slot of Feyenoord is coming to the fore in recent times. He does play a good brand of football that maybe is not too dissimilar on many metrics to Jurgen Klopp, but there are other factors that you need to consider in this, such as, is he the right character and personality? Does he want to come? What's the finances involved, such as having to buy out somebody like him from his contract? I don't think there's a release clause at Feyenoord. Obviously, Xabi Alonso has gone. We've talked on podcasts in the past about how somebody like Sebastian Hoeneß scores really well on Liverpool's data, but he's extended at Stuttgart and it's very early in his career. Eddie Howe at Newcastle knows the new hierarchy at Liverpool really well. He scores well on their data. He was in the mix when they appointed Jurgen Klopp, but all evidence suggests that he's staying at Newcastle and it won't be for him this time round. So I've not given you many answers to who it's going to be there, but the latest information, without saying it with concrete certainty, is that perhaps they've veered away from this notion on the outside world of Ruben Amorim.
Yeah, I mean, Mark sort of whittles down that list to some very particular human beings. Yeah. And they're not that many that I can think of right now off the top of my head. Someone who isn't too big but can wear the stature of Liverpool on their shoulders. Someone that can connect the fan base and the board. Someone who's got a personality. I mean, that is so specific. It's like Arsene Wenger leaving. It's like Alex Ferguson leaving. You see Xabi Alonso saying, do you know what? I'm going to stay at Leverkusen for a bit, maybe just to feel it out a bit longer. It's not an easy job to take, is it?
No, I'm wary not to call it a poison chalice because it's such a fantastic opportunity. But it's been said widely that no one wants to be the person to follow Jurgen Klopp because of his success. And it's interesting that you compare it with an Arsenal under Wenger leaving and Manchester United with Sir Alex Ferguson leaving. And that with Sir Alex Ferguson, yes, Manchester United won the league in his final season, but I would argue that it was a squad that was aging, and it was probably that was its, you know, the last dance. That was the final opportunity to do so. So he went out on a high, and it was sort of naturally going to take a bit of a lull. With Arsene Wenger, it came to its natural conclusion. Arsenal weren't fighting for titles at that point, and a change was needed. So maybe a change of style as a consequence was a bit more justified. Whereas, you know, David mentioned some of the candidates for Liverpool. That's pretty comprehensive of the different ones there, but all of them don't necessarily want to be that person to be compared with Jurgen Klopp. And for me, maybe just personally, I know it's kind of been spoken about, Pep Linders is a fantastic assistant coach for Liverpool. And it's been said, I think, from himself and from Jurgen Klopp that they will, as a backroom staff, be leaving Liverpool. I know that he has aspirations to manage. I think I've read recently that he's maybe linked with Besiktas in Turkey. But for all the reasons that I said about Manchester United and Arsenal, Liverpool don't need that change. David mentioned the style of play that Liverpool want. That is what they currently have. And that's what Pep Linders, as the sum of the brains behind the whole operation, has implemented. Yes, if he were to be the number one, it would maybe detract from his sort of time on the training pitch, and I get that. But what Liverpool want is the continuity, if possible. They don't necessarily need a change of style. So someone who does know the club, has that attachment to the fans. I know that it's been said that he may go elsewhere, but if they could try and convince him otherwise, for all the complexity of the situation and all the data-led research that William Spin would be doing, their best candidate might already be in the building, which I think is super interesting. But who knows? I don't know what the actual reality of that is, but it also feeds into the Liverpool style from generations gone by, and to Bill Shankly, into Bob Paisley, into Joe Fagan. It was the boot room style of that continuity, and that's the foundation that Liverpool's built on. So from a sentimental perspective, maybe it would work.
Again, you never know how this industry develops. Stranger things have happened, but we've been given very clear soundings that it's not going to be Pep Linders, that his career is going to be continuing elsewhere.
The romance is over, Mark.
I'm sorry to break hearts. And there are other names in the sort of ether, and I don't want to create some big stories that these guys are at the forefront, but somebody like Michel at Girona, he's doing really well. I think he ticks a lot of Liverpool's boxes. I don't think English is the strongest, so that could be a real issue. But Liverpool will be speaking to many of these people, whether it's interviews or just conversations to gain a feel. Somebody like Valverde at Athletic Bilbao is another I've heard being catching the attention of some of these clubs, naturally, when they'll be running the numbers on all of them. We have heard good things about Farioli at Nice. Now, he's young and he's developing, and so maybe a Liverpool isn't quite right for him now. Akira McKenna at Ipswich is doing fantastically well. Now, I'm not saying that's one for Liverpool. Maybe his links to Manchester United could have him on their radar. He is certainly on the radar of some other Premier League clubs. And then even at this sort of more mature end of the scale, but it's not going to happen on this occasion, I'm assured, is like an Ange Postecoglou, who has done really well so far at Tottenham. And a couple of the other criteria that I forgot to mention earlier in terms of that style of football, it needs to be suited to the style of players that Liverpool have recruited in recent times, because at the top of the tree is Michael Edwards once again, coming back to the fold, if not the club specifically. He's working for FSG, and you suspect that recruitment model will continue, and therefore somebody that comes in a managerial or head coach role will need to buy into that. A good track record for keeping players fit and available. It's been, no pun intended, a real Achilles heel for Liverpool in recent times, that they need to have their best players on the pitch regularly. Many clubs can say that, but somebody who has proven their ability to do that where they are coaching now, I'm sure will curry favour with the Liverpool decision makers. And then finally, somebody that is shown to improve players, get them to fulfill their potential and then maintain those levels. And there are a number of examples of those around the game at the moment. And I mentioned Emery earlier, that he is one of them, but he's not going to be in the frame on this occasion. And so that, I think, will be a really important part of the thinking too, as Liverpool make what is a seismic decision, you know, for the short, medium and long-term future of this massive club.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This is the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
You broke the story about Unai Emery extending his contract until 2027, ending speculation that he will go elsewhere. Look, Villa fans there are cheering because they're in a really good position for European football this season. But also another name who's not available for another big job. You look at clubs like Bayern Munich, David. Where did they start looking now? You know, who is available on the market with that level of pedigree?
Yeah, well, I'll just touch upon Emery. He was naturally being looked at as anybody who has done as well as he has at Aston Villa by some of the top clubs. And there were some reports coming out today, Tuesday, about Bayern Munich speaking to him. I'm not sure on the veracity of those, but what we were able to break is that he's extended his contract at Aston Villa until 2027. They're going to sit down with him in the summer and try and prolong that deal even further, because they have visions at ownership level of him becoming their version of Sir Alex Ferguson in terms of the longevity that he will have, ideally at Aston Villa, and hopefully bring them some success as well. They're on course to qualify for the Champions League. They are in the semi-finals of the Europa Conference League. This is a manager who took over just in October 2022, and Villa were at a low ebb under Steven Gerrard. He has transformed the club. They've given him everything, power, players in the market, staff they've built around him. And he's said to be extremely happy there. So wouldn't be interested in your Bayern Munichs or your Liverpools, even if they had come for him. They want to build a generation, a real legacy around him, like a Sir Alex Ferguson, like an Arsene Wenger. And that's a real sign of where Nassef Sawiris and Wes Edens want to take this club. And you raise a really good point. We talk about all of these managers, but at the same time, when it comes to Erik ten Hag's future at Manchester United, one of the common narratives is that there aren't suitable candidates available. Yet we've just reeled off like so many impressive managers, and that is a problem. So Thomas Tuchel, unless there's a dramatic U-turn, is going to be leaving Bayern Munich. But many clubs are saying, well, if it didn't work out towards the end at Chelsea and it didn't work out at Bayern Munich, do we want to touch him? And he's a manager who likes a lot of control and authority and power. Maybe that's a little old school element in him, despite the fact that he's quite modern in his style of football and other factors. And more of these clubs wanting to control things from executive level, sporting directors, technical directors, chief executive and ownership. And somebody needs to slot into that. And perhaps we are seeing less of the Carlo Ancelotti's, Jose Mourinho's, Arsene Wenger's, and Sir Alex Ferguson's. And so, yeah, Bayern Munich, they're being, you know, one minute they're being linked with Julian Nagelsmann. It was said to be a fait accompli. And then he extends with the Germany national team. They perhaps will turn to Ralf Rangnick. Now, that would be a remarkable turn of events because we saw at Manchester United, perhaps he was more suited to a sporting technical director role, yet putting him in the dugout where he has spent some of his career would be a pretty extraordinary step for Bayern Munich. And as you look around the game, you know, Antonio Conte's out there. Nobody's talking about him. He's a proven winner. But some of these managers, as we saw with him at Tottenham and elsewhere, with emotion and combustibility, and they fight for what they want, it doesn't necessarily go down well with the people at the top of the tree. And I'm sure there are some managers that I've missed out. Graham Potter's out of work at the moment. Ajax have been heavily linked with him, Manchester United a little bit too. But what will he decide? You know, does he have his eye on a particular club or an international job? Hansi Flick is another one out of work. He's been heavily linked with Barcelona if they have a vacancy. But will they have a vacancy? Because word from Barcelona is that they're trying to get Xavi to perform a U-turn and stay at the club. If he doesn't, then Xavi's on the market himself. and so you just go around, you think about all these situations and you triangulate it. Some clubs will already be starting to look towards 2025. We're just over a year from then. That's when Pep Guardiola's contract expires, as things stand. That's when Mikel Arteta's contract expires, as things stand. Does Carlo Ancelotti's too? I don't know if it does because he signed a new deal recently, but certainly there is a feeling that he might go then. There's the Brazil national team job that he's been linked with. So, you know, there'll be a vacancy potentially at Real Madrid. What happens with Xabi Alonso? Does he only do that 1 year extra with Leverkusen and then move on? It's got to be the most fascinating time in the managerial merry-go-round. There's one person I didn't mention in all of this, and it's Jose Mourinho, giving a big exclusive interview one. In yeah. recent days. He is not done yet, and yeah. he wants to be back in the mix. So, you know, it's almost going to become like the player transfer market, the movement of managers, and I love it.
Yeah, well, David took the words out of my mouth, this managerial merry-go-round. And Jack Pitbrook wrote an article a couple of years ago around Amorim being potentially the next sort of super coach. I think we've seen the likes of Xabi Alonso that could fit into that bracket. Who else is catching your eye in that space? You know, in the next 10 years, who might be the next Pep Guardiola, Jose Mourinho, Antonio Conte, Carlo Ancelotti?
It's a good question, and it's almost one that I'm not fully prepared to answer because it's so difficult. I think, I mean, with a Pep Guardiola or a Jose Mourinho, I think in many ways they are generational. I don't think there's necessarily someone who could maybe have the same sort of gravitas as a Pep Guardiola in the same way that we've spoken about Johan Cruyff in generations gone by. So I think that's maybe a tough one, but we did a series on site about the best up-and-coming managers. So those who do excite, Alonso being another one that we didn't actually write about because we covered him so widely. But, you know, again, David's covered quite a lot of them with Michel at Girona. Oh, yes. I was a big fan of, and still am a big fan of, Thiago Motta.
Motta, yes, Bologna. He's doing in Italy at the moment. Yeah.
Fantastic in Great the way show. That he's playing. And you know, you could speak about his style of how much it would escalate to the elite level. At the moment, Bologna are punching well above their weight. They're odds on, if not confirmed, for Champions League football next season. So
Simeone?
Yeah, Simeone. I think, yeah, they've, Inter Milan have only just last night at the time of recording won
exactly,
Serie A.
Right.
And the way that they play is so fluid, probably more than people give Inzaghi credit for, in the way that they have these overlapping centre-backs. They'll have crosses from a centre-back and the other centre-backs getting on the end of it with their wing-backs, and really fluid in terms of the midfield and the defence as well. So really progressive in that regard as well. And he's by no means old in that regard. Sebastian Hernes, I think David mentioned, is a really good example of that. Francesco Farioli is only 35 years old. I think people forget that as well. He's doing really well at Nice. Roberto De Zerbi, we've spoken widely about. You know, in terms of the generational side of it, who could replicate Pep Guardiola? Forget that Mikel Arteta is only 42 years old as well. I'm not suggesting he's moving. I'm just thinking that, you know, in terms of his pedigree within the game, there's loads of exciting managers and young managers. Whether or not we could put them in the same sort of bracket at this moment in time, of course, with the Jose Mourinho or Pep Guardiola, I'm not prepared to do. But to David's point, I think there's some fantastic managers out there.
Thanks, David and Mark as well. And also, don't forget to rate and review the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We're back tomorrow for more.
The Athletic.